We are Rogue Media Sports.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? Step up like a boss and save the day? Or see what life's like under the Tree of Life? Did you? If you could, would you? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play. Bring the magic at Walt Disney World Resort.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet? Well then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
It is the Doomsday Podcast, and we come to you moments after a Cowboys 2017 loss to the Los Angeles Rams. And Ed Werder joining me, as he always does. And Ed Werder coming to us live from Los Angeles, where he spent some time at the brand-new SoFi Stadium. And Ed, before we get into, there are a couple of very controversial decisions, a controversial call that we will hit. But give me your initial thoughts on the SoFi Stadium. How does it compare to AT&T Stadium? Did it blow you away? I know you spent a lot of time there today.
Yeah, I was one of the few media people who had a credential to this game, which obviously it's a $5 billion piece of technological eye candy. That's what I call it. Architectural eye candy. It's a beautiful stadium. It has a lot of similarities to Jerry World, which is not surprising given how involved Jerry Jones was in this particular project with Stan Kroenke, the Rams owner, and Roger Goodell, the commissioner of the NFL. This is the first NFL facility ever built in Los Angeles. Did you know that? I'm sure.
Wow.
I'm sure you, but most people probably did not. But the interesting thing about it, and it is quite beautiful, is basically an open air stadium with a canopy covering the field. And so because of that, there was some concern over the past 48 hours about whether the game would be played because of the California wildfires and their effect on the air quality. That didn't materialize, but being at the stadium this morning, there was a lot of ash in the seats. And I want to say it again, ash in the seats, because there were no in the seat. Okay. There were no in the seats because there were no fans because of the pandemic. But there was ash in the seats. Otherwise, just a beautiful stadium. Odd way to cover a game, quite honestly. I've been doing this for a long time, since the mid 80s. And I've never covered a game under these circumstances. I covered the USFL. I covered a Los Angeles Express game at the Coliseum, where there was a 100,000 seat capacity, and maybe there was 12,000 people in the stands for a Steve Young game. And this was like that in terms of being empty. You were in the press box. You had plexiglass between you and on either side of you in your little cubicle. And then there were two vacant seats on either side of you that were designated COVID areas before there was another human being sitting three spots down from you. And the glass in the press box was such that you couldn't even hear the ambient noise that the NFL's curated for all these games. It comes across quite well on TV from what I've seen, but it was kind of like watching that blue-white scrimmage where there was nobody, you know? It didn't have any – there was no feel that this was a big moment in sports history in Los Angeles. So it was odd from that point of view. And then – the hardest thing, I think, as a journalist covering a game under these circumstances is not going into the locker room and talking to players and coaches, looking them in the eye, reading their body language, and having them answer you in a more direct manner than you do when both teams are making certain people available on Zoom calls and they're calling on different reporters to ask a question. But the team representative is sitting right there monitoring the whole thing. And the player or the coach doesn't see whoever it is who's asking the question. It's less than ideal circumstances. But, again, at least the games are being played. At least the season has gotten started. without incident really so far.
Yeah, and Ed, just to hit on the pregame portion of the game, I know other teams did it differently, and there was at least one game where everybody during the kickoff took a knee except the guy who had did the kickoff. Cowboys did have one player, interestingly. It looked like a lot of Rams were doing it, but Don Terry Poe was the only player kneeling for the Cowboys. And Don Terry Poe has said it's not like he surprised anybody. He's been pretty upfront that he would do that. And then, of course, they showed pregame, Ed, and I'm sure you could see this from your seat in the press box, Jerry standing with his hand over his heart. Anything that really stood out to you about that pregame?
Well, obviously, Don Terry Poe making, you know, Cowboys history by being the first player to kneel during the national anthem carries some significance. It would be more interesting if that had happened before a full house at Jerry World. And maybe there'll be a reaction next week when the Cowboys play at home against the Falcons, and there's however many fans the Cowboys are allowed to have at AT&T Stadium. But I guess ultimately it kind of symbolized what this country is supposed to be about in terms of freedom of speech. I mean, Jerry was true to himself, and Don Terry Poe was true to himself, and everybody else was as well. Everybody reacted however they felt was right for the moment. And, you know, Jerry gave his players license to do what they wanted to do. And I quite honestly think a lot of them did what he would have preferred in deference to him. I think they honored his wishes for the most part.
Yeah, that is really interesting, and I am a little surprised it was only one player in the end. Real quick, before we jump into this thing, a bit of good news on our producer and great pal, Mark Friedo Friedman, and Mark is going to have a procedure tomorrow. We've tried to keep people updated. The people that listen to this podcast, he is Frito Nation Productions. He's our producer, has had a really serious medical condition. And Ed, it does look like there'll be something tomorrow that'll allow the doctors to go in and look at the heart. And the only reason that can take place is because through some other procedures, he's responded pretty well to it. He's reacting, he's moving around, he's obviously responding to things. He's got a twin brother named Joel, and I don't think Mark, before this happened, would have maybe designated his twin brother to make decisions for him. But now that this has all happened, Joel's done an incredible job, and I think
this
Mark's
is the best,
very, very
this
fortunate.
Is the best decision that Frito didn't make, is to have Joel put in charge of the decision making at the hospital. He has done an incredible job.
I think you're right, and he's done a great job communicating and all that kind of thing. And so anyway, we're thinking about you, Frito, and if you're listening to this podcast, we love you, buddy, and hope you continue to get better. Okay, Ed, let's start with something that happened with about a minute left in the ball game, and that is an offensive pass interference penalty that goes against Michael Gallup. I mean, it really looked like the Cowboys, they're obviously down by three, in trouble, 3rd and 10, and against all odds, against the great Jalen Ramsey, Gallup gets behind him in real time, Ed. And I know you were watching on the monitor, you were watching in person there. It looked like the same kind of hand fighting that we've seen go on for years. Between cornerbacks or defensive backs and receivers. And Gallup makes the catch, and offensive pass interference is called. And it was I don't think – you know, we've been covering his team for a long time, and I don't think anybody could accuse us of being homers. But, my goodness, it really – in that moment, in with what was at stake, and then also just watching the replay – it just doesn't seem like there was enough to really call OPI in that moment. And it was funny, Chris Collinsworth, I don't know if you could hear it or they were piping it in. Chris Collinsworth was not real confident in it, and so he leaned on the NBC official, which is McAuliffe, and the official came in and said, no, I don't think you call that there. But I'm telling you, it was, at least after watching several replays of it, that's not a call that usually gets made in that position. And the Cowboys, Ed, would have been in field goal position to tie that game.
Well, it nullified you're assuming, of course, and we'll get into this in a minute, but you're assuming that Mike McCarthy would have kicked the field goal in that situation, since he didn't do so earlier in the game when he could have tied it in the fourth quarter. But in that particular situation, watching it live, as I was from the press box on the sixth level, I can tell you that as soon as I saw two flags thrown on the play, I knew it was going to be on Gallup. I thought it looked like he extended his arm. I don't disagree that you should, you know, let athletes at that level in that moment of competition just compete fairly. But I did think he extended his arm, and Ramsey was insistent that it was an obvious call. And that he was interfered with on the play, which of course you would expect after the guy just got paid $105 million, by far the most for any cornerback in football. In the first game he plays after receiving that contract, he's not going to want to admit he just got beat by Michael Gallup down the field. But after the game, Tony Corrente talked to the Pool reporter, and that's someone we know, Clarence Hill from the Star-Telegram, and he also said that it was a clear and obvious extension of the arm by Michael Gallup. That is a textbook offensive pass interference call. Again, two flags thrown on the play. And, you know, I think when you're Michael Gallup, you're not going to get the benefit of the doubt against Jalen Ramsey.
Yeah, I guess not. But it certainly could have possibly given us some overtime. Corrente, and I'm reading this from the Pool Report, as you said, Clarence E. Hill was conducting that. It says, Corrente said, who's been an official, Ed, 23 seasons in the NFL. He's been doing it a long time. He said, in all situations that would be called, we're not going to allow that at any time of the game. I hear what you're saying. You sometimes, with NBA or anything, it's like, don't make that call there.
Right, let them play.
Mm-hmm.
And he's saying we make that call regardless of the circumstances. I'm trying to see if there's how many NFL offensive pass interference calls were made last season, because that would seem like a relevant thing. But let's see how quickly, if at all, I can find that. But it's not something that happens very often in the NFL. It appears that there were it's not totaled up here. Let me see if I can do it quickly. 1, 2, 3, 4. Apparently, according to this, there were only 4 OPI calls in the NFL last year.
Well, that's that's pretty amazing if that's the case.
Year. I'm sorry, that's this year so far.
Oh, okay, just so far this year.
There were 2 called against Arizona today. There were 2 called against Cleveland today, 2 against Detroit, 2 against Buffalo, 1 against Green Bay, and 1 against Dallas. And Miami had one.
Don't you always feel like the NFL's like a year late, and it always is like after something's happened to the Saints? It seems like they're always – yes. And so there's no review of pass interference this year, even though that rule was put in because of something that happened to the Saints. Let me just say this about Jalen Ramsey, to his credit. Now, what was kind of funny to me, Ed, is that in some sense, him selling it as much as he did, like leaning back, like, oh, my gosh, this guy's just almost kind of helped allow Gallup make the catch. You know what I mean? Like, if they don't make that play, you might be making the criticism of Jalen Ramsey, you flop. I mean, you did that. But in doing that, and of course, I don't think the officials would ever admit this, but I think when they review this, whatever committee looks at all this, when they grade these officials out, I think they will take a peek. It just won't help Cowboys fans feel any better. but I think they will take a peek at Jalen Ramsey kind of arching his back and selling the foul pretty aggressively.
Well, Stephen Jones is on the competition committee. It'll be interesting to see what his reaction to the call is.
Yeah, it will. It will be interesting. Okay, Cowboys lose this one. Some good things that happened in this game. Ed, you have been digging in, and I really want to get here because I do think this is very interesting. Something that happened: Cowboys trailing 2017. They are marching, and they have a 4th-and-3. They're easily in field goal position, unless you're the Bengals. Bengals. Did you see that today, Ed? The Bengals kicker missed like a 25-yard or a 30-yard or something. But they're easily in field goal position, and they decide to McCarthy decides to go for it on 4th-and-3, even though they're only down 20-17, and the field goal ties it up. Well, people were questioning this immediately, and I got to even say, Ed, if you're going to run a play and you're going to do that, throwing kind of like short of the sticks, and maybe he ran the route, maybe, but to a rookie, short of the sticks, a rough call, and obviously the wrong decision given what we know now, but a very, very curious decision that he would try to go for it there when you could just tie that thing up.
Well, let me just tell you this. Mike McCarthy did something in his first game in Dallas strategically that he had never done in 13 years as head coach of the Green Bay Packers. According to ESPN Sports Stats and Information, the Cowboys or McCarthy on 4th-quarter plays down by 3 inside the opponent 30-yard line never went for a 4th-down play. Never went for it under McCarthy. They had 6 such plays, all field goal attempts, 5 made, 1 missed. So McCarthy never did in Green Bay what he did tonight on the Dallas sideline for the first time. And I would say that it's interesting to me given that. So what changed, right? What made Mike McCarthy do something in his first Dallas game that he never did in Green Bay? And I would say that during his year off, Mike McCarthy became a believer in analytics in a way that is unusual for a 56-year-old man who spent the balance of his career in Green Bay. In fact, I was told that he wanted to develop a significant analytics department in Green Bay, but GM Ted Thompson never supported him. But McCarthy, in his year away and preparing for his return, began to subscribe to that theory that advances that concept because it would impress NFL owners seeking an edge and prove that McCarthy had evolved as a coach in his year away. And so I asked him after the game about that decision and what role analytics played it. And he said some interesting things. He said, I think analytics gives you a good structure to help you evaluate decisions. Analytics would tell you to go for it there, but there are other factors. And he said, and some of the things he cited were, I wanted our offensive guys to play wide open, especially going into our first game. I thought it was in our best interest of the team. I wanted the offense to feel like I had confidence in them. I thought it would be a huge momentum play for us at that time. Our big play production, they had 6 plays of big momentum plays in the first half. We only had 1. So my mindset was to create more of those opportunities for our players. But I will tell you this, the best way to win the confidence of your players is not to lose a game like that because of the kind of decision that Mike McCarthy made there. I think it's 100 times out of 100 that Jason Garrett kicks the field goal there, right? And I certainly thought it was the right thing to do. I mean, you're on the road against a non-division opponent. You're down 3, 9 minutes left. And you haven't had a whole lot of offense. And as it turned out, they didn't score in the 4th quarter. And so I think that was a mistake that cost them their best chance to win the game.
I really like where we're going with this. You really needed McCarthy to be more like Jason Garrett. Is that what you're saying?
Well, Dak Prescott said after the game that he respected that McCarthy was aggressive in that situation. He loved it. Yeah, that's great. That, of course, the quarterback's got to back up his head coach, especially after the first game of their partnership. And kind of to the point, I guess, you know, you either kick the field goal or you make a better call or you execute the play better. And, you know, I mean, to go to CeeDee Lamb short of the sticks, I'm not sure it's right to blame Lamb in that situation, because it actually looked like Darren Schultz, the tight end, was supposed to run his route deeper to clear more space for Lamb to work and get beyond the sticks on his shallow route. So I think there were a lot of things that went wrong in that situation in the execution of the play, and you can argue whether that was the right play to even use in that circumstance. But I still think that the play was to kick the field goal on the road and tie the game and trying to win it in the last 9 minutes.
It is it certainly seems like it was. And now, you know, we make fun of Garrett. Garrett, later in his time with the Cowboys, became a little more daring and did go for it more. But it just, in that situation, that is just so against almost all, I think, coaching instincts. I mean, we think of Belichick, of being someone who's willing to go for it in his own territory. Famously,
Andy Reid did it the other night. Andy Reid, the defending Super Bowl champion, in his first game, he went for it deep in his own, like almost Barry Switzer territory when he went for it. Just invoking all of the Cowboys coaches who failed to excel in strategy decisions. But yeah, I mean, I just think it's interesting that Mike McCarthy did something strategically that helped determine the outcome of the game, his first as a Cowboys head coach, and it was something he'd never done before.
Yeah.
And it's a guy who's had great success and had great success over an extended period of time. So why would he all of a sudden change the way he approaches a game the first time he's on a Dallas sideline?
Yeah, you're right, and what you don't want to do. I'm glad you went down this path, because it's not really the time to show, hey, I've evolved, and I had a chance to kind of show off all my analytical studies with game on the line like that, and so it's a really interesting path that you're going down. You know, talking about Mike McCarthy in that way, and in your point, 13 years of evidence as a head coach in Green Bay, that's really, that really sticks out. And so it's like you most times, I think, Ed, I think Jerry and Steven would be happy to think, well, we got this head coach who did all these studies, and they were probably impressed when he brought some of that up in the interview. But tonight, maybe he used it in a weird – and you hear all that talk. That's some coach speak from way back. I wanted to show my players I believed in them. I wanted – that reminds me of some old Parcells stuff. Coaches love to say that. I wanted to let them know I believed in them. But I think you made the best point. Let them know that by trying to go win the football game. Not that he wasn't trying to, but it was a out-of-character decision, as you said. Now, Ed, to the point you made earlier about, well, I wanted to be – wide open on offense. All right, we saw some good things. Dak was 25 of 39, 266 yards and a touchdown. But I would say scoring 17 points against the Rams, a team that was 9-7 last year, I would say that that's not exactly wide open, or this talk of, oh my gosh, this is the best wide receiving core maybe they've ever had. They've got the great Zeke. They've got the great Dak. 17 points is 17 points. And this, you know, I would say the defense actually probably did enough for them to be able to win the football game. I mean, we didn't expect the defense to go out there and just lock everybody down. But offense has to be better than this.
Well, you know, Dak Prescott – first of all, the Cowboys' defense played 36 minutes on the field. And the reason they were on the field so long was because of the Cowboys' offense failed to produce, especially on third down. Dak Prescott was 1 of 7 for 11 yards and a sack on third down. So he completed 14.3% of his passes, or had a 14.3% completion rate on third down. That's the worst in any game of Prescott's career in which he had at least five such attempts. So that tells you that he wasn't effective in the crucial situations in the football game. So when you have a quarterback who's not making plays and extending drives and a coach who fails in his biggest moment, then you're probably not going to win the game on the road if you're playing against a quality opponent. And I think the Rams are a tough team to play for a defense that, like the Cowboys, was playing its first game under a new defensive coordinator in Mike Nolan, had five new starters on defense, including a rookie corner, and two defensive linemen, one of whom hadn't played since 2015 in Alden Smith. And you got your two linebackers, Leighton Vander Esch, who winds up getting hurt and is going to be out an extended period, and Jalen Smith playing different positions. And you're playing against a Rams team that plays tempo, that gets to the line of scrimmage and tries to create an advantage in that situation, really tests your conditioning, denies you the ability to substitute, and, you know, really, really does a great job with misdirection. And so I thought the defense was up against a lot in that situation. And so I think they played fairly well given the amount of time they were on the field. And they did create what could have been a significant turnover, the Chido Uzier interception, the result of an Alden Smith pressure on Jared Goff. But the Cowboys only got 3 points out of that, not seven. And so they failed to take the lead in that situation. But I thought the defense, for the most part, played pretty well. You'd like to see them get more than one turnover, but at least they created one short field for the offense.
Yes, they did. And Ed, I thought you'd be excited about this. We've got a new advertising partner, and I just want to thank. And this is an entity that is very fond of the Cowboys and has a longtime partnership with them. Miller Lite is the only beer of the Dallas Cowboys. Miller Lite has a 30-year partnership with the team dating back to 1991, Ed, when the team was still playing at Texas Stadium. You remember those days.
I remember it.
Yeah, you remember some of that being on tap up there in the press box. Some writers were known to imbibe on at deadline on some of those things. During the 2020 season, Miller Lite celebrating 60 years of Cowboys greatness. Tonight is the exception. pick up special marked packaging, the Cowboys 60th anniversary imagery and logo at participating retailers. Celebrate responsibly, Ed. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 96 calories and 3.2 carbs. per 12 ounces. Ed, that's not gonna fill you up. And you know about these things. So, Ed, welcome Miller Lite to the podcast.
The official beer of Randy Galloway, isn't it? And yes. Frank Luxa, I think those are two of the guys you maybe were referencing and did so in an unnamed fashion, protecting their identity. But there was nothing wrong with it at the time. And I know Mr. Randy loved Miller Lite when he was in the Cowboys press box, but I don't think he ever drank until after he filed his stories.
I guess you haven't read him. All right.
Yes, we're thrilled to have Miller Lite.
Okay. Yes. All. Yes. Definitely. Definitely. Okay. Ed, a couple more points. Want to make. You brought up the defensive performance, and Alden Smith gets his first sack with the team. You brought up the interception as well. That was a Woozier, got the interception. He also had a pass deflection. Anybody, Ed, stand out to you? I would say from a negative standpoint, Leighton Vander Esch gets hurt really early. The reports I've seen, Ed, it's a collarbone and broken collarbone. What an awful way to start. And then Blake Jarwin appears to have a serious knee injury. And I would say those are two very important players, and that's a rough way to start the season.
Yeah, you know, Mike Nolan, the new defensive coordinator, did something that was pretty interesting, I thought. I mean, the Cowboys kind of played it down. But when he came in, he evaluated Leighton Vander Esch and Jalen Smith and decided to have them change positions. And so they moved Leighton Vander Esch inside. Now, you know, physically he looks like a guy who could handle more physical contact. Because he's got long arms, he can keep people off of him, you would think. But I really question the wisdom in that, given his injury history. Both, you know, coming into the league, there were a lot of teams, quite honestly, that took him off their draft boards because of some, you know, spinal stenosis. And obviously he suffered a neck injury last year and missed the last seven games having neck surgery. And now he comes back and he plays a quarter and he's got a fractured collarbone. And that's going to create an extended absence. And how's he going to play when he comes back, when he rejoins the team? And then at the same time, then you're putting Jalen Smith outside. And this guy had a catastrophic knee injury and, you know, nerve damage in his foot. And, I mean, I'm not claiming I know more than the coaches by any means, but I thought the Rams took advantage of him again in space. In situations where he had to cover either a receiver or a running back or tight end. And I just don't think that's his forte. And so, you know, I'm not sure those were good moves. And Vander Esch getting hurt, I don't know if it had any – I didn't know which play he got hurt on or created the injury. I don't know if it was contact from a Rams player, if it was hitting the ground or what it was. So I can't say that if he had been playing outside, it wouldn't have happened. But it just seems you're more susceptible to getting hurt playing inside the defense than outside the defense, at least in your neck and shoulder where you're going to be taking people on and not have as much space to operate. And, yeah, Jarwin is obviously a huge loss because he's really their only receiving tight end. You know, obviously when they didn't bring Jason Witten back and he went and signed with the Raiders, the previous day they extended Jarwin 4 years. And so obviously they were giving him the first opportunity for that role. And now he's gone probably for the rest of the year.
Yeah, and Ed, the player who will need to step up and become the starter, and they may have to look out and see if there's anybody they could bring in or trade for or whatever. But Dalton Schultz, who looked okay in training camp, but tonight on a couple of high throws, just, you know, that maybe Jarwin, because of his length and he's just more skilled. I think he would have had a better shot. And Schultz was not able to help Dak Prescott. You know, this team is, you know, it's safety right now, has some pretty nondescript safety play. You know, the Rams, again, they didn't just destroy the Cowboys offensively, but I think one thing that was brought up during the game, Ed, and I'm sure you noticed it, it did seem like the tempo that the Rams were using, something that McVay is known for, did give the Cowboys trouble as far as getting lined up in time and assignment wise. And it just, I think it bothered them. And listen, that's not that Malcolm, is it Brown? The running back,
yeah.
Yeah. He, you know, this is not some kind of like world-class running back, but, that's the second time he's put it on the Cowboys.
Well, you don't want to draw too many conclusions from week one, especially given the unusual circumstances of this offseason. And the Cowboys were, you know, making a coaching change, so more disadvantaged than a team like the Rams that has, you know, the continuity of their head coach and their quarterback, you know, having been together for a long period of time. Obviously, they made a change on the defensive coordinator side too. So, but with the Cowboys, the Rams, you know, had a scrimmage. So their players tackled and played at game speed. The Cowboys chose to protect their players, and they never had any kind of live tackling, no scrimmages. And so given all that they were up against, you know, I think they gave themselves a good chance to win. They just didn't execute when they had to achieve that objective. But I just think it's too early to say, you know, hey, this is what this team is going to be. I think I would certainly expect them to play better on defense going forward. And they didn't get a lot of pressure on Jared Goff tonight on a consistent basis. And part of that was, you know, the word around the league on Jared Goff is, look, if you let the Rams run the football on you, if that's part of the equation, then Goff is probably going to be successful because he relies on the play-action game. He's not a guy who is a drop-back passer. If you know he's going to throw, you can beat him. That's the book on Jared Goff, and the Cowboys couldn't achieve that tonight. And so their mistakes wind up costing him a chance to win the game. And it was Mike McCarthy's first game. And you know what? Tom Landry and Bill Parcells and Jimmy Johnson all lost their first games as Cowboys head coaches too. So,
yeah,
like Mike McCarthy said, this only means we won't go, you know, 16-0.
Yeah, after the game, it was stated, well, this is by the announcers. I think Al Michaels, he or Chris Collinsworth said, yeah, some people – think this is a preview of the NFC title game. And I thought, oh goodness, I don't remember really hearing that, but that was one of the things that was said. Now, one of the things you always like to bring up after a game like this is, did they let Dak Prescott run a little bit? He did have 3 carries for 30 yards. And Ed, we've brought this up before, that one run he had down there near the goal line, that really does seem to fire the Cowboys up, you know, that from an emotional standpoint, and is kind of willing himself toward the end zone. I do think that kind of that helps this team. I mean, I watched some other games today, and the teams that have quarterbacks, that obviously we know about Lamar, but like I was watching the end of that game today, Ed, and you probably were up in the press box watching this too, but Kyler Murray just went out and won the Cardinals a ball game because San Francisco, a good defensive team, one of the best defensive teams, just had no chance of catching him. So right. It is these teams that have mobile quarterbacks, you know, seem to do pretty well.
Well, and we know that, you know, Dak has said that he likes to play a physical game at the quarterback position, and he does think you know, his demonstrating his willingness to put himself at physical risk to try to score or to get a first down has an emotional effect on his teammates. And particularly so when they're home and there's fans in the stands, it creates that. But I would say that, you know what, if Jerry Jones and his coaches are not going to have Dak Prescott run when he spends 4 years making $2 million a year or less, I'm certainly not going to be advocating for it when he's making $30 million. I think you run less a $30 million quarterback less often than you run a $2 million quarterback.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. Next year, Ed, they'll be paying him, what, $37 million. So we'll see.
But he'll never leave the pocket then.
That's right. He'll be a total pocket passer. All right, before we have some closing thoughts, I did want to say, winning season returns, Ed, at MyBookie. Winning season means doubling your first deposit. Winning season means Survivor, Super Contest, and Squares. At MyBookie, winning season means hitting all your parlays and props with your feet up, watching your team trounce their rivals. Invest in your intuition. Use the promo code DOOMSDAY, DOOMSDAY. And double your first deposit. New players get up to $1,000 in free play, designed to add more excitement to the sports you love and the games you bet. It's simple. Make your picks, win big, collect your cash, use the promo code DOOMSDAY, and double your first deposit. Your winning season begins today, only at MyBookie. All right, Ed, one thing I wanted to share with you that I like during these games and immediately after these games, have you noticed our audience, they start asking, when is it dropping? What time is your podcast coming out?
So, you want it.
So, I like it. I like it when our people get demanding, and we will do that throughout the season. Thank you so much, by the way, to Vocal, and Vocal Media does a great job. That's V-O-K-A-L, and our man Jay tonight for producing us as we hanging in there doing some great things in place of our buddy Frito, and we appreciate Vocal. Ed, I would say if you're going to take solace in something this evening from a Cowboys perspective, you would take solace in the fact that the Washington football team at halftime today, facing a 17-0 deficit, came rolling back to beat those Eagles. I would say Cowboys and Eagles love each other's misery. So I think both those teams, or both those fan bases, can take some solace in each other losing today.
Well, the Cowboys have to like the fact that the Redskins sacked Carson Wentz 8 times in that game. And exposed maybe some protection issues that make the Eagles vulnerable. But, I mean, that assumes that we're right in believing that this is a two-team race, right, that it's between the Cowboys and the Eagles again, and that the Redskins and the Giants aren't going to be factors. And we all know that that is a dangerous proposition in the NFL, to assume any team is not good enough all of a sudden to rise up and contend when that was not the expectation. And that's a team in Washington with the new head coach and Ron Rivera. Obviously, he's had a lot of success. He's been coached Carolina Panthers to the Super Bowl, helped make, you know, Cam Newton a league MVP the same year. So, you know, Dwayne Haskins, he was a first-round pick. Chase Young, a first-round pick who pressures the quarterback. So maybe the Redskins will demonstrate that the Washington football team, I slipped up already. The Washington football team will demonstrate that they're more capable than we thought. But that, they'll have to prove that by winning more than once to me.
All right, Cam Newton leads the Patriots to a win, and Tom Brady did not have a great day in the Superdome, and we'll see how they respond after that. But Ed, wasn't it great though, to, even though it looked weird and there weren't fans, but just, I know you were at the game, you were at SoFi Stadium checking out that gorgeous new place, but wasn't it fun to look up there and have all the games going? I mean, that just, that really brought it all back. Real quick, Ed, final thoughts on SoFi. Now, when you, the walk-up appeal, what is it, when you start driving up to it, is it just, oh my gosh, kind of like AT&T Stadium, just massive? What is there any infrastructure kind of around there yet, like places to eat or bars, anything like that? I know people aren't really doing that right now. What's the whole kind of our surrounding area look like?
Well, it's very space age looking in the way it's shaped. It's not far from LAX. It's about 3 miles from LAX. So obviously everything's built out around the stadium, including there's a big Hollywood Park casino that I don't know if they ever got opened or not before, you know, the government began to shut down things such as that because of the COVID issues. But yeah, I mean, it doesn't just stand out by itself out there. It's very near the Forum, where all the Laker dynasty teams played. So there's a lot around it. It's not like Arlington, where it's kind of out there by by some other theme parks and so forth. It's very much downtown, in terms of very near LAX and some other properties people are familiar with.
All right, Ed, it's 10:50. On the West Coast, so you should probably go out now. It's still pretty early for you. So I'd like to maybe see you go out, maybe go to Roscoe's, get some chicken and waffles, go do something fun.
It's not, you're a virtual shut-in in LA, in California, obviously a Democratic state, and we're from a Republican state. And so I'm kind of been a prisoner of my room. Unlike Texas, where you can go out, eat, and it's 50 to 75% occupancy, eating in restaurants and bars and so forth. Here at the hotel, for example, all the restaurants are closed down, and you can call room service, but you have to go down and pick it up and bring it back to your room and eat it, or take it outside to the pool area and eat it. There's no indoor dining in public spaces here, so it's very different than what we're used to in Texas.
All right, well, I'd like to see you go out to the beach or something. We've had good times on the coast, on both coasts. We travel all around together. But you will appreciate the artist Twyman, the PR, received a request from me Friday night. I decided I wanted to come to the game.
Oh, really? I wasn't aware of this.
And he, he was very nice about it. But he explained to me that they had really gone through their complement of people that wanted to, obviously there were a lot of people that media that wanted to come into that game, and they'd gone through it very quickly. So he, in a nice sort of way, he was letting me know I was a little late on my request.
Maybe you can test your ability to get into a Cowboys game with a noon kick against Atlanta next week.
No, I really feel like my chances are better at some of these other stadiums. All right, Ed, any final thoughts as we say goodbye after Cowboys lose 2017 on the Doomsday Podcast?
I would say a positive takeaway other than the performance of Aldon Smith was that, they started three rookies. The Cowboys started had the fewest rookie starts and the fewest rookie snaps in the entire league last year. And tonight they had three rookie starters, including one of whom was a great surprise. I don't think that Trayvon Diggs starting at corner surprised us. I don't think CeeDee Lamb starting at wide receiver surprised us. But I think undrafted Terrence Steele starting at right tackle without a single preseason game was quite a shocker to all involved. And so I thought Diggs and CeeDee Lamb acquitted themselves very well. In fact, in his first punt return, Lamb went for 20 yards, which was longer by 5 yards than any punt return the Cowboys had all of the 2019 season.
Well, that's a good closing thought. That was surprising to see the young man, a free agent out of Texas Tech. Does that sound right?
That's right.
Yeah. That was strange. And they took advantage of him at times, which is to be expected, although he didn't get exposed as we've seen some Cowboys backup linemen over the years. We'll see how they bounce back from this one. Ed, I appreciate it. Great to have you. And I'm glad the Doomsday Podcast could send you out to Los Angeles.
I'll file my expense report in a very timely fashion, as you know.
Yep. You and Frito are both about as good as anybody I've ever seen at filing invoices to me. All right.
Wait a minute. There's a difference between an invoice and an expense report.
Oh, yeah, it's true.
And if you'd like me to show you the difference, I'll submit both this week.
No, I've seen what your expense reports look like. All right. Excellent work. Appreciate it. It is the Doomsday Podcast. We'll be back next week after the Cowboys play those Atlanta Falcons in the first home game of the season. Good night, everybody.
Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because...
I got the charcoal mask. Great, because why would I put that on my face when I could drop it in my sink?
This is what I get for multitasking.
Ugh, why is charcoal so sticky?
Hello?
Hey, Janice. I am so sorry. I thought I was on mute. No, we don't need to reschedule. I'll just stay off camera.
Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet. Well, then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.